the first undisputed WWE champion wasn't enough. Over the years, my next guest has added singer and podcaster and actor and New York Times best-selling author to his resume. His latest book, The Complete List of Jericho. It takes us through Chris Jericho's 30-year career, match by match, where he details every dropkick, every pile driver, every figure four, and full Nelson. I'm super excited to welcome Chris Jericho to the show. Hi, Chris.
Yes. Wow. Exciting. It's so funny to see that clip from like 23 years ago from Chicago with The Rock. That was funny.
You know right away what that clip was, you know, what, you know, because you chronicled every single match you were in. I never knew this. You actually wrote a journal about everything you did.
Well, nobody has really done that before. And I remember my first day of wrestling school, I asked the trainer how many matches he had. And he said, that's a stupid question. No one's ever kept track of that. I thought, well, maybe I will. And I remember after having my first match, October 2nd, 1990, Pinoca, Alberta, against Lance Storm. And I wrote it down on a piece of paper. And I just thought, well, every match that I have, I don't know if I'm going to have 10 or 3,000 or whatever it's been. And I just kept a list of every single one. And here we are 30 years later, and I decided very uniquely to release this as kind of a history book, not just on Chris Jericho's career, but kind of like in pro wrestling total, about how, you know, this documentation of a 30-year career that traveled all around the world. And I don't think you'll get another person that has a career like that. So in a way, it is the textbook that I was always hoping for when I asked the wrestling trainer 30 years ago. And now you can go look it up.
What do you make of, like, I'm just looking at these pictures and I'm like, oh, it was so dramatic. It's like a live Broadway show, but at the same time, it's also, you know, like a boxing match and an ultimate fight. And what do you make of the fascination that people have, Chris, with all of the historical aspects of wrestling? Because there's TV shows now going out and searching for like artifacts, like where was the Undertaker such and such, and, you know, where's Andre the Giant such and such. And these right. shows are really doing well.
Well, I mean, wrestling shows are really doing well. I mean, our new company you just showed from the Blood and Guts match that we had AEW. I mean, we came out of the gate right before the pandemic in October of 2019. And 3 months later, we got a renewal of our deal from the TNT network for $175 million for 4 years. So wrestling, there is a huge fan base for the business because it is neither fish nor fowl. It's not quite a sport. It's not quite fantasy. It's a combination of the two. And I've found that wrestling fans, KISS fans, and Star Wars fans are like no other. They're very loyal. They're very detailed. They want to know all the information. And once again, that's another reason. If you look behind me, you see a Rush book right above the title there. I got the idea for the Complete List of Jericho when I found that Rush book that just came out a few years ago that detailed every single gig that Rush ever played, every concert, every set list. And I thought, well, this idea that I have of all these matches from 30 years would fit with this perfectly, because I know that fans, especially my fans, some of them have been there for 25 years, maybe 30. 30 years, if you really stretch it, they want to know this information. And right out of the gate, the book did amazing because I knew it's something that you can't get anywhere else and no one else has ever really done it. And it's something specifically that our fans, wrestling fans, would really enjoy. So I catered to them for that.
High props for the Rush reference, Mr. Winnipeg, Canada. That's a small little detail I learned about you. We're from the same hometown.
Yes, well, so are you. I didn't know that.
Right. And I think we're probably showing our Canadian when we, you know, lapse into the accent, right?
Like I said, when you were talking to the other people before me, you didn't have a Canadian accent. Now that you've been on with me, it's starting to creep out. We might have hung out in the same bars together back in the 80s. Who knows?
It's probably true. It's probably true. So I want to go back to actually to when we're not that different in age. We were actually, you know, off camera comparing where we went as kids. But when I was a kid, my dad always had wrestling on. And And these icons, they're part of my childhood. Like I listed them down. Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Randy, you know, Macho Man Savage, Iron Sheik, all these people, you know, were huge characters in my life. And I remember watching thinking, but is it real? And I wondered what your childhood experience was watching wrestling, wondering, is this real? Because it's really crazy.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing. It's funny that we grew up in the same city because Winnipeg was a very huge rock and roll city and a very huge wrestling city. And that's why when I was very young, not even a teenager yet, I decided that I want to be a wrestler and I want to be in a rock and roll band, because that's kind of what was the petri dish of Winnipeg entertainment, throwing the Winnipeg Jets, and you've got the Holy Trinity, so to speak. you know, when I was a younger kid, like 15, 16, 17, there was no internet and there was no, you know, dirt sheets, as we call them, behind the scenes, you know, publications where you could find out all the secrets. So I didn't really know what to make of it. I mean, sometimes you'd see guys talking and that sort of a thing. But when my grandma got me into wrestling when I was 8 years old, like, there was no doubt it was real to her. Like, you can't even suggest that it's not, because my grandma would flip out. So I kind of grew up in that environment. I found out for sure the real secret of what wrestling was in 1989. I was the ring crew for a local indie promotion that went up and toured the reserves of Manitoba, Northern Reserves, which are, you know, 20, 24 hour drives. This is the summer. So you'd be going through these dirt roads in the dense forest. And that's when I found out the real kind of behind the scenes of what wrestling is. And I couldn't believe it at first. I was like, what? It's not really real when you win a match, and it took a while for me to grasp that. And it's funny hearing that now, because now you just type in wrestling and there's 10,000 dissertations and podcasts and books that explain everything. But back then there wasn't. So you kind of found out a little bit more organically about what the business was. And I think as a result, I had a lot more respect for it. As you can tell from doing this for 30 years, and like I said, documenting everything that I've done, it's because I really appreciated being in the business, because it wasn't easy to crack that circle back in those days of the late 80s, early 90s.
Hey, when we come back after the break, I have so much more I want to ask you about, like that time that you dropped Stone Cold and The Rock in one night. And then I also want to ask you about Vince McMahon and all the drama that is scripted into this incredible show that is professional wrestling. When we come back, the amazing Chris Jericho. Yeah, nice hit of metal with Fozzy. That is the new single, Sane. Chris Jericho, obviously, is the lead singer out in front. And it doesn't surprise me in the least, Chris, that you're the lead singer of a band and that you've done all these other things as well. The acting, the podcasting, the, you know, this really rounded career, the best-selling author. Because you really are a part of a production and a big show and scripting and storylines when you're part of wrestling. How do you think all of that comes about? Is it the magic of Vince McMahon? Is it you guys throwing in some ideas for what could happen during a storyline, say, between you and The Rock and Stone Cold? Or how does it all come together?
Well, I mean, I never saw myself just as a wrestler. I was always, even from when I was 19, focused on the entertainment aspect of it. Like I said, I wanted to be in a rock and roll band. I started playing music when I was 13. I started wrestling when I was 19. So they kind of were all kind of woven together. And I mean, that single that you just showed, Sane, is our sixth top 30 single in a row. And with a bullet, which is great. So we have a lot of steam from this, because you have the same passion and desire that you use in wrestling or in music or in anything that I do, because I always saw myself as a more well-rounded performer. Wrestling is all about storylines, but it also is accordance to what you bring to the table. I wrestled for 9 years before I got to WWE, and I was a big star around the world, Japan and Mexico and Germany and multiple other companies in the States, because I knew that even though I might not be the biggest guy on the roster, I could have the biggest personality and the biggest charisma. And I really grasped onto that. So all the best stories that I had in WWE that I can think of, and all the best stories I've had in AEW over the last 2 years, I had a huge part of that. Because you can sit back and let other people write those stories, but no one knows the character of Chris Jericho better than me. So all of the storylines that I'm involved in, especially now over the last few years in AEW, I'm writing 80% of them, because it's just using this 30 years of experience to tell these well-rounded tales that really connect with people and hook them in, because that's the secret of wrestling or music or newscasting or anything that you're doing in front of an audience. You have
telling
to connect.
Stories.
You got to connect with the crowd, exactly. And if you can connect with the crowd, you'll always have them interested in what you're doing.
So I also think, like, gosh, when I started seeing the storyline, and I'm not a big follower of wrestling, but this tells you how pervasive it is into just the rest of general culture. Vince McMahon in the hospital, bed, getting attacked, and Stone Cold and The Rock plotting against each other, and the amazing stories of Ric Flair and the tragedies he went through. I think about how much your personality makes you the star in the wrestling ring, and how much your ability to act, because, like, you're an actor as well. You're in MacGruber. I'm going to show that in a minute. But are the more successful actors the ones who are real fit, but also phenomenal with their personality and their ability to perform?
Well, once again, I mean, wrestling is show business boot camp. I mean, if you can really excel and get to the highest levels in that business, in our business, you can go off and do anything. And you can see that with all the different guys, even all the different stuff that I've done. And you mentioned those stories. Those stories are 20 odd years old, and you still remember them because they're just well-crafted storylines. And that's what we really focus on in this day and age. Like, I keep mentioning AEW because that's where I work now. We focus on those storylines because people aren't stupid, and people don't like plot holes, and people like well-told stories, like I said. So the better you are at telling those stories, like I said, and playing the roles, like Chris Jericho is an extended version of the person you're talking to right now, and turned up to the 100th degree. And whether you are a villain, a good or a hero, a villain, a bad guy, whatever it may be, you want people to be invested in those storylines. And that's the real secret of what it is. And the better you can do that, the bigger of a star you'll be. So there is a lot of acting to it. You have to play a character, much like, you know, when Ozzy Osbourne goes on stage or Alice Cooper, they become those guys on stage. And then off stage, it's a little bit less of an example of that.
You know, it's funny you bring up Alice Cooper. I was talking to him once about his amazing career and why he was the person he was, you know, starting back in the 70s with the drooping makeup and everything. And he was amazing, what he said. He said, every boy band out there like the Monkees was Peter Pan, and I wanted to be Captain Hook. So that's what I did. I went for Captain Hook. And there he is off camera as like a scratch golfer who plays in all these programs.
Right.
Clean as a whistle.
The thing.
He doesn't, you know.
I mean, when I was kind of at the peak of my villain, we call them heels in wrestling, when I was at the peak of my heel character, I had literally people attacking me on the streets. Happened in Victoria, BC. It happened in Madison Square Garden. It happened in Greenville, South Carolina. So this is, you know, people literally trying to get in the ring to attack me, or even on the street, like I said. And that's because, I mean, when Anthony Hopkins walks down the street, he's really not Hannibal Lecter. He's really not going to eat your liver with a fine Chianti. When Chris Jericho walks down the street, if I'm playing that villainous part, people are like, you screwed John Moxley, you screwed Shawn Michaels, and they're really legitimately angry about it. And that's the difference, like I said, about wrestling either being fish nor fowl. It's hard for people to understand that it is a show because it is so connected to realism. So there really is no other form of entertainment like it. And that's why people gravitate to it so much, because if you are a fan, you're going to get an experience like no other. At no rock concert or comedy show or movie or anything like that will you experience the same thing you experience at a wrestling show, which is a combination of all those things.
Yeah, I think it's, I feel like it's part of my youth. It's the story of watching my dad watching wrestling and wanting to sit with my dad, so I'd watch wrestling as well. Hey, when we come back after the break, Chris, I have this question for you that we like to ask a lot of our guests. We put you at a table for two, and the table has a chair that's empty on the other side, and you get to put anybody you want in that chair. And when we come back after the break, I'm going to ask who your table for two person would be, alive or dead. You can choose anyone you want. Back with Chris Jericho in a minute. Back with champion wrestler Chris Jericho. Okay, before the break, I asked you, who would you seat at your table for two, living or dead? You can pick anyone in the whole wide world. Who would yours be?
You know, it's interesting because there's two ways of thinking about it. And one, like, I go into a family kind of thought process, like how cool it might be to talk to my two grandfathers who, I mean, my one grandfather passed away in 85. The other one was in 95. Or my mom, she passed away in 2005, to talk to them more as an adult, maybe. But if you're going for non-family, I would love to have a conversation with Paul McCartney. And I have a podcast, Talk is Jericho, which is very, very popular, and it's done great numbers over the years. And that's kind of the one guest, you know, there's a few of them, David Lee Roth and Ozzy. Alice was on twice, who was great. But I would love to have Paul McCartney just to talk with him for an hour or whatever it may be, and not around other people, not have to worry about fanboying, just talking like two successful dudes, because that's usually what it is. Once you break down the wall of who this person is, then you're just two dudes who have cool jobs that can discuss different things.
But were you a huge Beatles fan or Wings fan or what? Like,
massive Beatles fan. I mean, my all-time favorite. There you go. Yeah, my all-time favorite band is the Beatles, among other bands. But I think the Beatles and the Stones are kind of like, if you went to Jurassic Park, you see these two majestic dinosaur creatures that as soon as they die, you'll never see them again. As soon as McCartney and the Stones are gone, that kind of era is closed. And here these guys are, late 70s, almost 80, still performing and playing concerts. That's inspirational for me. That means I still got another 25, 30 years of performing, and that's good to know.
So I'm glad to hear that. So what's coming up? What can I see you in? What kind of acting, other than the movie and of course the band? What else you got coming up?
Yeah, we're finally getting ready to go on tour again, which is great, with Fozzy. I mean, that's in September. I think every band is just waiting to go back out on the road. AEW is going back out on the road in July now, which is great. We've been in Jacksonville for the last year and a half, and for 6 months of that time frame, we were wrestling in front of nobody, which was very strange. So we're going back on the road in July as well. So it's just great, you know. And the coolest thing is, I did a movie with Kevin Smith a few years ago that he's now selling as the first ever NFT movie. And if you know what NFTs are, that's a whole other conversation of what the kids are buying these days. So as a result, there I am in Jay and Silent Bob as a Ku Klux Klan leader. There you go. But it's just cool to be involved in that, because now everybody in Hollywood is talking about this new, the first ever NFT movie starring Chris Jericho. So through the back door, everyone's talking about me now from a movie standpoint, which is hilarious, because it's just right place
and
at
look
right
at
time.
Us. You know, we just happen to have the clip right then and there.
Right,
hey,
there.
Chris Jericho, it's really great to talk to you. Let's hope that you and I can hoist a Labatt's up in Canada together sometime in our hometown in Winnipeg. And good luck on all your future endeavors, my friend.
Thank you so much. I'll see you later. Hey, go Jets!